For the first time in a month, Israel has resumed attacks against Hezbollah targets within Beirut itself, just as the armed group was set to respond to a U.S.-drafted ceasefire proposal. It responded with a yes, but with reservations, particularly about a Western-led committee to oversee the deal.
Now, according to Parliament Speaker Birri, the actual American proposal itself does not include Israel freedom of maneuver. That's being said to be more media speculation. But the that issue of the committee to oversee the implementation of a resolution, that is a point of reservation.
Israel has still not stated its position on the U.S. proposal that is based on UN Resolution 1701. It was adopted in 2006 and called on Lebanon to extend its authority along the border. Israeli officials say it was never implemented, and its army crossed the border last month as part of efforts to destroy Hezbollah's capabilities.
Israeli residents in the north will only be able to return home if the army has freedom to face any breach by Hezbollah or any other terrorists.
That freedom of action is seen here as a violation of sovereignty.
These attacks in central Beirut are increasing a sense of insecurity among a population that's already struggling with a collapsed economy. Hezbollah has called on its supporters to be patient. They may listen.
But in areas outside the group's dominance, many people are angry. There are deep political and sectarian divisions in Lebanon.
Where are we heading to? This has to end. We don't want war. We want to live in peace. There is bombing every day. There should be a ceasefire.
Others disagree. They say Hezbollah members are part of society, and there is no justification for Israel to target them away from the battlefield.
I think every person has the right to defend his country, no matter what. And of course, probably they were visiting their relatives, their people they know. So they have the right to move all over Lebanon.
2 months into a war that has already killed thousands, there is cautious optimism that a proposal to end the conflict is on the table. But for now, that's all it is. Zana Khudr, Al Jazeera, Beirut.
This week in Gaza began, as so many have, with more massacres of Palestinians. Dozens of people killed in an airstrike on Beit Lahia, more in Khan Yunis, Al-Mawasi, and so on. Scenes of mass murder and forced displacement that fail to make headlines on most Western news channels, and certainly not in the Israeli media.
There's very little from these scenes. 90 people were killed in Beit Lahia 10 days ago in a bombing. This was rarely reported, even not to mention being shown. But there is still a very forceful trend to depict the images of the bodies of children taken out from the rubble as fake news.
And every terror has his own shift.
Israel has an iron grip on the news cycle. Journalists who are allowed into Gaza are usually friendly and carefully managed, and information coming from official sources is often skewed or inaccurate. Forced displacement in northern Gaza. Israeli soldiers firing indiscriminately at civilians and aid workers, rarely being challenged. The war is being seen almost exclusively through official Israeli footage. Media handouts that flood the news landscape with the aim of projecting Israeli supremacy. The counterbalance is often user-generated content from Palestinians themselves, people with smartphones documenting the mass murder of their relatives, friends, and neighbors. Earlier this year, more than 50 international broadcast journalists, including senior staff members at CNN, the BBC, Sky News, Channel 4, ITN, ABC, CBS, and NBC, signed an open letter demanding foreign media be allowed into Gaza. The inability to report independently, the lack of transparency, the lack of access, points of frustration for the industry for months.
Our major problem covering Israel-Gaza right now is that we can't get there. This is an unprecedented situation. Independent Western journalists are not able to get there, or anybody else, except for those people who are absolutely risking their lives every single
day.
It's about telling the story of Gaza, telling the story of the Palestinians. You know, actual local journalists would tell you about a people.
In chat rooms and on social media, Israelis say they do see Palestinian suffering. Some credit those images for the mass protests against Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and his handling of the war. But even though there is some introspection about the treatment of Palestinians and the expansion of the war into Lebanon, Israeli propaganda that puts Hamas's attack on October the 7th center stage still dominates and fuels a sense of inevitability of Israel's ongoing decimation of the Arab communities around it. Israelis have started to describe the conflict as endless, the mission of their spin doctors singular. Control the narrative, prolong the war. Zain Basravi, Al Jazeera.
Well, for more on this, let's bring in Orly Noy. She's an editor at Local Call. It's an independent Israeli media agency, and she joins us live from West Jerusalem. Thank you so much, Orly, for joining us. So we've heard that report there. What's your experience so far on what you're seeing or not even seeing when it comes to freedom of press or a lack of it?
Thank you so much for having me. I think that your introduction was actually way too kind towards the Israeli media. It's not about tight governmental control. The Israeli media has the freedom to report the truth and the facts from Gaza if it wanted to. The thing is that the Israeli media doesn't want to report the truth, doesn't want to report the facts, and is very much willingly is a complicit in concealing the truth about the heinous crimes that are being committed in Gaza. If you're an Israeli that got all your information about the war in the last year only from the Israeli media, you would come to think that for over a year, the Israeli army is fighting only terrorists in the Strip and doing everything within its capacity to protect civilians from being harmed. You would think that it's the most moral army in the world, providing more than enough humanitarian aid, alarming people before bombing their houses. That is considered to be something very humanitarian in the eyes of the Israeli public. So, yeah, the Israeli public is just seeing a different war than the rest of the world is seeing.
Mm. And, you know, context is king when it comes to journalism. Certainly, in my experience, having been in the field there, many of us were targeted from as soon as the war started, if they even assumed a person was working for Al Jazeera. Of course, many of our journalists have also been killed. And now we've also been banned from reporting there. Is that likely to change anytime soon?
I don't see it changing, and you should see, by the way, it's even worse than not reporting is the Israeli journalists that actually do enter Gaza, of course, on Israeli tanks and with Israeli military protection. We could see Inon Magal, one of the prominent Israeli journalists, actually filming himself as he himself bombs houses.
This is the social media guy, is that right? The anchor that has a huge following online.
Exactly. He was very proud about it, you know, celebrated his participation in the war and in the destruction. But, you know, Magal is a well-known rightist activist. He's not taken very seriously as a journalist. The more problematic appearance is with a journalist like Orat Chemov, very respected journalist that has been covering the Palestinian scene for years. His documentary from last week was a shameful display of propaganda when he entered once again, protected on an Israeli military jeep, a tank to the Strip. And they promoted this piece very extensively, saying it's the first true footage from the Strip that you could see, of course, ignoring the dozens of Palestinian journalists risking their lives to report. Well,
speaking
about
of
what's
dozens
going on
of
in
journalists,
Gaza.
You have around more than 126 Palestinian journalists that have been killed there since, and media workers as well, since the war started. Just because we're running a little bit out of time, Molly, we've also seen the highest number in a year since tracking started in 1992, not just of deaths of journalists, but also arrests. Now, the narrative that you're talking about, yes, it's top down, but how much is the public willing to even believe in the existence of the fact that there are Palestinians under occupation? Because I've spoken to many of them, and yes, they seem to repeat the narrative that the government is putting out there. But how much of the media there is complicit to that? Because they could, if they wanted to, push against that, but they don't seem to.
I think that the Israeli media's coverage of the war resonates very well with the ongoing Israeli desire for revenge. So the Israeli public doesn't really have any interest in trying to, you know, reveal the truth behind or to question even.
Because the information is out there on social media. They could have access to it.
That the information is out there. We at Local Call in 972 have dozens of Palestinian journalists. We publish their reports from Gaza. The information is out there if they want to. But the Israeli media won't give the public that information, and the Israeli public doesn't require that information. And again, it just sees a different war.
Mm, so much to unpick here, Ori. No, we also haven't had a chance to talk about the videos that have come out of those soldiers that are sharing their videos on TikTok and really showing that they are complicit to war crimes. Thank you once again for joining us there, Ori Noy, editor at Local Call, an independent Israeli media agency.